Hello, everyone. This is your co-host, Stu, and I'm here with the paranormalist, Patty Wilson. Patty, how are you today?
I am doing great. I'm a little tired. It's a little chilly out. It's sort of like we went back to winter, but okay.
Yeah, I had the heat turned on in the house today for the first time, I think, in 3 weeks, three and a half weeks, something around there.
Yeah, Granny's B&B was up and running last night, and I had little ones, so we had the heat on last night because I didn't want him to catch a chill.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't turn it on until this morning, whenever it was, I think when we woke up, it was 37 Fahrenheit, and yeah, you could tell there was a chill in the air.
Yeah. Well, you know, we live out in the woods, so there's no concrete, which the concrete helps keep things a little warmer. So we were at 33 degrees this morning when I got up, but I got up about 6:15. So it was chilly.
But, I mean, here it is. Now, as we're recording this, it's the 21st of April. And as many decades as I've lived in Pennsylvania, I have never seen snow in June. So I know it's the warm weather's coming. So.
It is. We'll just live with it. Yeah. So.
All right, enough about the weather, and I think I have everything will be in the description down below, whether you're watching on video or listening to an audio platform. If you're driving and listening, don't try to read it while you're driving. But everything about the Paranormalist podcast will be down below. And if you have any questions, comments, we'd be happy to hear those. Our email address is paranormalist@theparanormalistpodcast.com. And because that's a rather lengthy thing, it'll be in the description for you to click on whenever you're in a safe place. And so with that, what's our topic for today?
The Vadi Agar. So.
I will have to look that up to see how to spell it to make the episode name.
I can send you the spelling. It's not so hard. So for anybody who wants to look it up, it's Vardogers. You'll see variations on it. Okay. So these are, it's an old Norse word. You'll find it in, you know, Norse countries. Ireland has a lot of these stories as well. And they are spirits that precede the witness is what it kind of means. The actual root meaning from the old Norse word would be a guard or watchman or warden and of the mind or soul. So watchman of the soul. And basically what it means, it's a kind of reverse deja vu. So instead of you having an experience and going, wait, I remember doing that, you actually have an experience where something plays over twice. And the first time you hear or see what you anticipate, and the second time it happens again, but then you realize the first time wasn't real. There wasn't really a person there.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was doing a little light reading, as I am wont to do. And I came across this term, and I was like, I have never heard that, and I've been in the paranormal world a long, long time. I've heard stories that I later recognized were that. But that particular terminology, I didn't know. So it really kind of reminded me of a story. I had a boss at a job I worked at, very lovely lady. And she would tell this story once in a blue moon. Her husband, go every day to work like normal. And he'd come home right about 5:00. She'd get home at 3:30 and he'd come home at 5:00. And so one day she'd hear him coming through the garage. He would go up the stairs, 3 steps from the garage into the house. From there, he'd walk out to the kitchen, plump down his lunchbox, yell, hey, I'm home. And, you know, she'd come out if she was busy with something and say, yeah, I'm in the living room or wherever, whatever. And then thus would start the evening with them and their children. And on this particular day, that's exactly what happened. She heard the car coming up, the garage door open. He drove in, up the steps, into the kitchen. Clunk goes to the lunchbox. Hey, honey, I'm home. And she yelled out, I'm in the living room. I'll be right there. And she goes rushing into the kitchen and there's no one there. And she's like, where'd you go? Hey, what's up? Are you in the bathroom? And she's looking for him. And he pulls in the driveway again. And everything happens again. And she goes to the kitchen and she's like, why did you go? Where did you go? You've only been like 10 minutes since you were here. And he's like, I've not been here for 10 minutes. What are you talking about? And she tells him what she heard. And, you know, you have to have that contraption to open the garage door. It doesn't just like flip up on its own. It's not like somebody else could do it for you. And then, you know, who comes in the house and, you know, follows his same routine. And he said, you know, I was wanting to get home so bad tonight. I just don't feel well. She said, I always wondered if somehow or another he actually kind of left his body in some way and came home without it. Just kind of went through the routine and the rest of him caught up.
That is so spooky because I've had something like that happen and I just discounted it, essentially. Now, in my house, I've got all the points of egress have cameras. So, and two of the bedrooms are above the, actually all three bedrooms, if you think about that, are above the garage. And I was in one of the bedrooms and I, because I work out of my home office, you know, and Mrs. Stu works out of the home. And I could have sworn I heard the garage door open. It has a very distinct sound, especially when it's right below you. You rumble, rumble, rumble. And I thought she was home, so I took a look at the camera and said, nothing. You know, no car in the garage, the garage door was closed, but yet I very distinctly heard that sound. I've had other instances where I've heard people talking that sound like they're coming from the garage. Now, it could be somebody going by the street or anything, but this was so weird, and it's, I could probably count on just one hand the number of times it's happened, but it's certainly, now that you've said that, it's almost like a, what it brought to mind was the Led Zeppelin song. I think it's Whole Lot of Love, where you hear Robert Plant singing just very faintly first.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's like they took the tape and they backed it up, you know, 20 seconds and then started playing it very softly. And then the actual vocal comes in. So almost like a foreshadowing of what's to come.
Exactly.
So that was, huh. Now I got a name to describe what I experienced. How about you? Have you?
I did not, but my brother did. When my dad died, I was 12 years old, and my youngest of my brothers, who was 18 years older than me, he had been in the hospital with my dad. My mom was there and my two other brothers and him. And he was in a really rough place in his life in every direction because he was in a middle of a divorce, and yet he still was talking to his wife, and it was just a bad time. And then his dad is dying and all this other stuff is going on in his life, financials and all of this. So he still talked to his ex-wife or soon to be ex-wife a little. And on this particular night, this is the story. He came in to her house, which he still had a key to. And he didn't know where to go. I mean, like, his dad was a seminal human being in his world. His mom had died when he was a tiny little boy. His dad had raised him alone. He literally lost his entire world that day. And so he didn't know what to do. So he went to where his kids were and he left himself in. It was the middle of the night, probably about 2 a.m. And his ex-wife came out and she said, I'm so sorry your father died. And he looked at her and he said, how did you know? And she said, well, you were in here 10 or 15 minutes ago when you first came in. And he said, I just got through the door. She's like, no, Terry, you were in here about 15 minutes ago. You went to the bedroom door and you said, dad died. Then you came out here and sat down in that chair. And then I came out to talk to you and you were gone. I don't know where you went.
Wow.
So, you know, was he so distraught and in such need of his children that he got there before his body?
Interesting, because there was actual interaction. You know, that makes it even more fascinating to me.
It's an amazing thing. There are accounts of this in writing from journals and what have you, and letters that go all the way back to the 1600s. And I'm sure that these experiences go even further back. You can go back into Egypt and come across stories there that you could definitely call part of this process. And but I had dug up some of these stories to share with everybody. So there's a book from 1848 called The Night Side of Nature. And this particular authoress, she describes some. She has this one about a sheriff who was in Frankfurt, Germany. And he had a male secretary who assisted him. And the secretary was out for the morning on business. And after a while, the secretary comes walking into the room and he grabs hold of a book on his desk. And when the sheriff says something to him, he turns around and just drops the book and vanishes. So he picks up the book, and it's called Leonidas. And he puts it back on the shelf, and he doesn't know what to make of this. How do you explain that? Now, the thing that I found fascinating is that the figure picked up the book.
Right. Yeah.
He's material. He's able to interact with the material world. And then he just drops the book and vanishes when somebody speaks to him. So later in the afternoon, when the guy comes back, the secretary comes back, the sheriff says to him, "Anything different happened to you today?" And he said, "Oh, yeah, I was talking to this guy, and we got into this really heated discussion about botanical things, and I'd wished I'd had this book, Leonidas, about plants and botany." He said that it's on my desk, and I was so wishing that I had brought this book with me, because it would have proven my point exactly. And he said, "Really?" And he told him what had happened. And he's like, "Well, that's impossible. I was all the way across town." And he said, "And yet that's the book that you were holding in your hand, the one that fell to the floor," and he hands it back to him. So the thought that you can physically react in this world without your physical body is, you know, it's really fascinating. And of course, I mean, people say, "Well, ghosts do it all the time," and they do. But how do the living manage that trick?
I have a theory. I'm sure you do too. But
I have a few. Go ahead. Why don't you tell us your theory?
That we're living in a simulation, and it's a glitch of something. I mean, it's all scripted, you know. And if we are living in a simulation, everything is programmed out. It's just it's a glitch where something happens before it's supposed to.
Interesting. Yeah, I know there's a lot of people who believe that we're living in a simulation of some sort. Much like the Truman Show, I think, is the name of that movie, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yeah.
Maybe that's why we're finding out all this stuff that's been around, going on around us that we never knew happened. Maybe we're in that part of the Truman Show. Because I don't know about you, but the world's been decidedly different in the last little while. But I just thought that was fascinating.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah, that would also explain the Mandela effect.
That's true. I hadn't thought about it, but that's true, which is a fascinating topic in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But the only other sub theory I would tell you I at this point might have is that that the spirit can manifest itself in the physical realm in some respect. That we there's a story I read a long time ago, and it was from one of those chicken soup for the soul type books, you know. And it told this crazy story about this young man who's in Hawaii. And the young man was in a bad car accident, and he ended up in a coma for like 4 months. And he gets a chance to come back, and he starts working physical therapy and what have you. And eventually, after about 7 or 8 months, he's all together. He's able to just kind of be out on his own and do things and what have you. He doesn't need assistance anymore. And he's sitting on the beach one night watching the moon out over the water. And this young man comes up and he sees him and he's really angry. This young Hawaiian man, he's really angry. And he's screaming, "There you are. How dare you do what you did to my sister? And I can't believe you have the nerve to show your face here again." And he's screaming and he's really, really angry. His spittle's coming out and looks like he's ready to deck him. And the guy gets up and he's like, "Dude, I don't know what you're talking about." And he's like, "Don't you even." He's like, "5 months ago, you know, you disappeared and you were supposed to be marrying her and you just left her there, just left her. She was in such a depression." And he's telling this crazy story about how this young man had been dating this other man's sister and how they'd been planning to get married and had like this whirlwind romance. And then one night he just didn't meet them for dinner at a family function. And then he was just gone. And everybody in the family figured that he had ditched her. And the guy says to him, "Not that I believe you, because none of that could be true." He's like, "Dude, I was in the hospital. I was in a coma. I can show you my medical records. You know, there's no way that all of this happened in the last 8 months." And the young man calms down. He's like, "What?" He's like, "Wait." And he shows him these scars on his body from the accident and everything. He's like, "I was in a coma." He's like, "Seriously?" And he's like, "Yeah, I could show you the records." And the next day he goes to the hospital with this young man and he says to them, I would like to show a copy of my medical record. Get a copy of my medical records, please." And they pull it up and he hands a copy to the Hawaiian guy. And he's like, "This is impossible." And then he looks at him and he's like, he looks like he's going to pass out. And he says, this date, this is the date they say you came back around and you were conscious again." And he's like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Dude, that's the date you were supposed to meet my sister for dinner and you didn't show up." And so he went, and here's the interesting part about this. He went to visit the family with this young man. They tell the whole story. They have photographs of him and her together at the beach and at family functions and all kinds of stuff. And they can't reconcile what happened because on one hand, here he is. Obviously, he was in the hospital. There's a bazillion medical records or scars on his body. Nursing staff who verify, you know, all of this. And yet, he's in the pictures.
When you were telling that, that also made me think of another thing. Okay. That, I mean, the mechanism of this is, I would say, similar to like a poltergeist where you'd have, let's say, a troubled person could be causing the manifestation of a poltergeist. Well, this would, instead of being malevolent, this is actually just, you know, like a step farther from that. Whereas the whatever's going on in the brain of the person who may be projecting these things, it literally is just that, a projection, but it's not malevolent, at least not in the sense of a poltergeist, but
right.
It almost, to me, it sounds like the mechanism could be very similar.
And that's a possibility. The fact that these beings, this, whatever it is, the mind, whatever, can manifest seriously. Like there's a picture, I've seen some of these pictures, there's pictures in the book. Like he's kissing the girl, physically kissing her, holding her hand. You can't fake that. That's not just a foreshadowing at that level. That's something.
No, that would be a literal manifestation that you created matter out of thought.
Yeah. And I just found this whole concept really fascinating in a way I hadn't thought about until just recently. You know, I mean, I've heard like occasional story here and there. And like I said, I've heard a few from family and friends, but it didn't capture me the way it suddenly did as I was reading through some articles and stuff. And there's just so many of them that this is a phenomenon we don't talk about. It's not a doppelganger exactly, because, you know, a doppelganger is whenever you're in two places at once and doing two separate things. This usually appears to be doing the same thing, you know, and usually there's a malevolent intent to doppelganger stories, not always, but usually. And in none of the stories I read was that even possible. There's a story about a professor who had an elderly lady in waiting, kind of maid servant in his home, and every morning before he'd get out of bed, the maid servant, she would come in and she would open the curtains, she would look at the clock, and she would say to him, you know, good morning, sir, breakfast will be ready in 20 minutes, you know, whatever it was, and he would wait till she left, and then he'd get up and get dressed and get ready and come down, and she'd have breakfast sitting there waiting for him. This was her job, you know. So on this one particular morning, he's in bed, she comes in, she opens the curtains. Again, that's a physical manifestation. Something is moving. And she walks over, looks at the clock, and then stops. There's a mirror right beside the clock, and she seems fascinated by her appearance. Like she's looking at herself. He was a little surprised because he could usually hear her coming on the carpet, on the, like, walking on the floor, headed to the door, and he would kind of make a point of, like, poking his head out from under the blankets, you know, before she got there. But this time she had just appeared at the door and just came in. So he says just something to her about, you know, this is so-and-so, are you okay? And she turns around and she looks at him and she just fades away. And he's utterly shocked. And his first thought is, oh, my Lord, has she died in the night?
Reasonable thought. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, she's an older lady and maybe that's what's going on. So he jumps out of bed and he's ready to go after her when all of a sudden he hears her footsteps. And she comes in. She goes to the curtains. She looks at him and she says, oh, I see that you've already opened the curtains. And he said, no, you did. And she said, don't be silly. I was running late this morning. I barely managed to get up here on time. I was asleep in my bed 10 minutes ago. And he's like, that's not possible. Now, the interesting thing about this one is after it happens the first time, and she had worked for him for years. It didn't happen for most of the employment, but only towards the last 10 or 15 years she worked for him. After it happened the first time, he would say this happened multiple times. And on several occasions, he jumped up and ran downstairs to her room, peeked through her door, and she was sound asleep. And he said it was frequent. He said exactly in the letter he wrote to somebody, he said, this has become a frequent occurrence with this lady.
I find that interesting that she was asleep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's significant at any rate.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It seems like there's a focus or, you know, of some sort that seems to have to happen for these cases. And I just think it's a really interesting thing that they've got to have some focus. What was she dreaming? I have to wonder, you know, was she, you know, at some level, our mind is so much more powerful than we give it credit for. Was she at some level thinking, I really need to get out of bed. I need to get up there and take care of the, you know, the professor, or, you know, and yet her rest of her brain was going, oh, stay in bed and sleep. You're tired. You know, what was going on with her? But it's fascinating. She could be in those two places doing those two things and following through with her job and yet not be awake. So there's another story I came across in a book called Phantoms of the Living. This one is about a case from 1882. And it was a story about a husband who came home late one night and he had been running a little late. Now, this was a cab, a hansom cab with a horse and buggy, that kind of thing. Comes clicking, you know, up the driveway and stops at the door. The bell rings and she said she hears her husband's voice talking to the cabman. The front door opens and he steps on into the house, which she had heard many, many times before. He often took a cab if he was running late or it was getting dark or what have you. She thought nothing about it. So she went out to the front door and he wasn't there. And she said she heard his footsteps going up the stairs and she figured he was going to the drawing room upstairs because he often would go in there and sit down and have a glass of, you know, port or something, and kind of like relax a little before going downstairs to see what was for supper. And so she heads up the steps. He's not there. Goes to the bedroom. He's not there. She goes back down the stairs, although she can't fathom how he could have passed her, and he's not there. And so she goes out to the kitchen, and she's very, you know, stupefied by what's going on. And she says to the cook in the kitchen, she says, did the mister go out the back door? And she said, oh, no, ma'am, he hasn't been here yet. And she's like, yeah, he's been here. I heard him going up the stairs, and I heard his voice at the door. And as they're talking, there he is. She hears the coach coming up the driveway. She hears her husband talking to the coachman as he's paying him for his ride, wishing him a good night. She hears the key turn in the lock. She hears him come in. She hears him hang his coat up and the clatter of his keys onto the little table in the hall, draw in the hallway. And then she hears him starting up the stairs. She looks at the cook, and the cook's looking at her funny. And she's like, ma'am, he just came. He just got home. Now, with more than a little bit of concern, she goes up the stairs, and there he is sitting there. And she said, why did you go back out again? And he looked at her and he said, my dear, I didn't go back out again. I'm late because the train was late today. So he was still on the train when she heard him the first time.
Makes me wonder if he was asleep on the train.
That does make me wonder that as well. It was just a fascinating story, I thought. And as I said, there are so many of them. I was interested because when I was doing all of this, I came across a mention of a friend of mine. His name is Brad Steiger. He was a writer. He was a prolific writer, like just scads and scads of books. Also, a really nice man. Him and his wife were both very nice people. And when I first started writing, they were some of the people that I would ask questions and stuff of and share stories with. And so I really liked this gentleman a lot, and his wife as well. Anyway, there's a story in one of his books from 1968 that I have not read all of his books. I freely confess that's because there's like so many, I would have to just do nothing but read Brad Steiger books for the next 20 years. And but in this one book, there's a mention of one of these spirit events. And he said about he was a teenager. He was sitting in his bedroom, and he heard his parents, you know, coming in as from downstairs. He could hear the door opening and closing, the sound of their feet, the sound of their mom and dad taking their coats off and hanging them up, keys clattering, the whole nine yards. You know, they're talking while they're doing it. And it was getting late this particular night whenever he heard this, and he yelled downstairs when he heard it, hey guys, I'm going to bed now. I kind of waited up to make sure you guys got home. Talk to you in the morning. Good night. There was no answer. Nobody called up the stairs, you know, good night or anything like that. So he goes down to see what's going on, because that's not like his parents. It's a kind of a deal that they would, you know, they always kind of just did it. It was their routine. And he goes down and he walks all through the house, and there's nobody there. And as he's kind of puzzled, he sees lights flashing in the window, and he realizes it's their car coming up the driveway. So he's standing there waiting on them, and he said, you know, where have you been at? And they said, oh, well, we were just running a little late tonight. And he's like, I have to tell you something. And he tells them the story. And much to his surprise, and he doesn't elaborate in the story, but much to his surprise, they were not shocked. But he's like, he would hear this from time to time after that, and he actually began to document it. Perhaps it's even part of the reason he got so interested in the paranormal, because almost every book he wrote was about the paranormal. But you know, that this became a thing that happened on nights when his parents were running late. It often happened.
Very curious.
Yeah, there's just so many stories and questions about this. I remember that I had read a long time ago about a young woman. She was working at a pizza shop, and she would go in. She would always come in early and open, or she would be the last person out and close. you know, there's always that couple people who know how to do those two tasks. And she did. And she was just a young girl. She was maybe 19 or 20 years old, but she had started there at the age of 16 when she got her first job. And so she'd been there long enough to kind of know the ropes, if you will. So on Saturday nights, she was a closer because Friday and Saturday, she didn't have school. So she would close those nights and she would open, you know, on the following morning. It was a lot of hours, but that's how she kind of made up her time. So on this particular Saturday night, she's in there and she's closing. She gets done. She goes home. And in the morning, there's this other person who works with her who was closing that night too. And he said to her, "I'll see you in the morning." She's like, "Yeah, sure. I'll see you in the morning." And she goes home and whatever happens, happens. And she goes to bed. And in the morning, she comes in and she starts to open. And he says something to her about, you know, like, "Where's the money?" Or, "Did you get the drawers filled yet?" or whatever it was. And she didn't answer him. And she goes buzzing on by him. And he goes, "Hey, did you do the drawers yet?" And she still doesn't answer him. She goes into the stock room and she's moving stuff around and he can hear it happening, right? And he's disconcerted by all of this. And he goes in and he's like, "Hey, did you get the drawers done yet?" And she just looks up at him and blinks and disappears. At just about that moment, on the other side of the building, he hears keys clattering. Now, when you open, you don't unlock the building until it's time. So you go in and you get the stuff done ahead of time. And, you know, and they're very, restaurants in particular are very cautious about this. I worked in restaurants when I was young, and they all had these like rules about you couldn't be the first one. You couldn't be there in there by yourself in the morning. You couldn't be the last person to leave. There had to be another person so that there was like a buddy system going. And she had come in with him. She was doing her thing. He thought she was just following, you know, things like the way it always was. And then she comes running in and she's like, "Why are you in here?" And he's like, "What do you mean, why am I in here?" And she's like, "I tried to get a hold of you to tell you I was running like a half hour late. My car was broke down. I had to get my dad's car to get here." And he's like, "You've been here the whole time." And she's like, "No, I haven't." And then he sits her down and he tells her what he saw. And he's like, "I can't explain it."
Yeah, that one makes it a little more, you know, poltergeist-like, you know, because, you know, she had that distress from, you know, being late for work.
Yeah, there's, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. And although this isn't strictly that particular thing, I'm going to tell one more and then we will call it an evening this evening. Because the stories are very similar. It's always somebody, you know, getting startled and what have you. And I could tell you 30, but they're pretty much the same thing. But this one in particular is a lady by the name of Molly Fancher, who she was a young woman in the late 1800s. And she was engaged. She was a beautiful young woman. She was engaged to get married. Her and her boyfriend went out on a carriage ride one night and something spooked the horse and the horse took off running. And in the ensuing melee, there was a horrible accident. She was badly injured and she was crippled and blinded by this accident. So the rest of her life, she would be bedridden. Her life completely changed. Molly was just an insane story. So she was blind. And in one of the other things that was odd is her legs were broken and they healed wrong. So she couldn't put any weight on them. And then she had one arm that for some reason was like held up above her head permanently, like it stiffened in that position. And the doctors had even attempted to break it to get it to move. But the joint was frozen is how it appears. And but Molly would be able to do the most insane things. And she would do, she did embroidery. If you can imagine being blind and having to hold the thing over your head and go like this and do it, but she could embroider without seeing. And then she would say to people that were there, there were always caregivers there for her, obviously. And she'd say, "Oh, I need more embroidery floss." And they would say, "What color do you want?" And she'd say, "I'll just put four or five of them on my forehead. I'll tell you which one I like." And it wasn't like she would say, "Give me the, give me the third one in from the top." She would say, "Oh, I like that particular shade of of blue, it's almost like the sky, I remember. And hey, I'll take that one. So they'd thread the needle for her, and then she would do it again. She would read letters that were left unopened. So like a letter would come for her, and she would say, do you want me to open the letter and read it to you, Molly? And she'd say, oh, no, just put it on my forehead. And then she would read the letter to them, and she'd laugh and like just show like she was really reading the letter. And she'd say, oh, look, listen to this, listen to this. So-and-so sent me this in, and she'd read this little anecdote or whatever to them. And when they would open the letter later, they would find it was exactly what was in the letter. So this doctor comes and he takes over her case. And, you know, he felt sorry for her. She was a beautiful young woman. Her whole life got really sidetracked and derailed. And they would talk when he would come to check on her. And he would tell her little things about his life. You know, you have to pass the time while you're there. And she needed the company. So he would sort of linger sometimes and just tell her, oh, you know, my wife and I are going to have a dinner tonight, or we're going to do this, or we're going to the play. And I'll tell you all about the play next time I come. And one night he mentioned to her that there was this great big dinner party he and his wife were hosting. And Molly said, oh, I would love to be able to see all the beautiful ladies' dresses and everything. And he said, well, I'll take notes, Molly, and when I come back the next time, I'll tell you all the beautiful and outrageous clothes the ladies wear to the dinner. And when he comes back a few weeks later, he says to Molly, I have my notes with me about the dinner. And she said, oh, don't bother, doctor. I was there. Mrs. So-and-so's tiara and those sapphires she had was absolutely beautiful. And the dress matched it almost perfectly. And she's going on and on. She's relating dialogue, conversation. I do think your wife was a bit jealous, doctor. After all, you were sitting near Miss So-and-so and she was flirting with you madly and going on. He's like, how could you know this, Molly? And she's like, I don't know. But I can just get up and leave my body when I need to. It's the only thing that gives me comfort now.
Wow.
So it's not quite one of these, but it tells me that there's that possibility.
Yeah, I got no theories about that one.
I know. I know. If you ever go to Lilydale Assembly, the last time I was there, they still had it. One of the tapestries that she embroidered, and when I say tapestry, it's the size of a bed blanket, is hanging on the wall in the hotel inside the compound, and it's insanely beautiful. There, you just sit there and you're like, a blind woman did this. It's amazing. So if any of our listeners have ever had a story like this in their life or their families, we would really appreciate you sharing them with us. This is a fascinating little known area of the paranormal, but one that I think is well worth, you know, considering and looking into. And with that, I'm going to say good evening.